to be Brian Boyette from CDC, but he was unable to make it to San Diego, so I'm going to present data from his study for him. I was involved in helping to get the rapid test algorithm part of the study into his study, so hopefully I won't screw up his slides too bad. So similar to what Jacqueline presented, we're going to talk about what I would consider to be a field evaluation of the rapid test algorithms, except in a completely different setting. This is going to be in two large urban emergency departments. I think most people in the room are familiar with the fact that CDC in 2006 produced new guidelines recommending routine screening of people in medical care settings between the age of 13 and 64 for any medical care setting where a prevalence of HIV is determined to be greater than 0.1% or 1 per 1,000 people tested. This includes emergency departments, obviously, as a medical care setting. The nature of ED medicine is a little bit different than your average primary care physician's office because their focus, from the ED doc's perspective, is to treat them and get them out of the way to treat the next person. But they also, and this is highlighted in other presentations at the conference, they serve as the primary care for a large portion of the U.S. population, whether we like it or not. But the combination of those two factors ends up lending itself to, if you're going to do HIV testing in an emergency department, you probably want to do a rapid test so at least you can get a preliminary result to people before they get discharged from the emergency department. The problem then becomes, if you don't have continuity of care in the emergency department, how do you provide confirmatory results to those patients? And so that was background on the screening guidelines and implementing screening in EDs. I wanted to talk a little bit about the background on the rapid tests and about testing with a rapid test in an emergency department or other low prevalence setting. These HIV tests are better than almost any other screening test that we have for any disease or condition. And I don't know how many times I can say that, so I'll just say it once. The specificities are at least 98% for all of these tests. If you look at what we screen for newborn screening, the specificities and sensitivities are not anywhere near as good as our HIV tests. We've done a very good job of getting our HIV tests to the point where we should be very confident in the results, except for the fact that if we actually were to implement our screening guidelines in the U.S., we would test over 110 million people in the EDs every year, and most of them don't have HIV. So what that means is that if we're lucky, we will test a lot of people and we will have a lot of positive results, but we may not have many positive screening test results that actually represent infection. So if we were to take that 110 million and cut it in half, and we would be doing very good if we were able to test 55 million people in emergency departments. We'd also be doing very good if we actually found a prevalence of 0.5%. But if we use specificities and sensitivities around the range of the rapid tests, and look at the number of false positives that we would expect to get out of this, we're talking about at least 50,000 false positives and probably more than 150,000. And this is still at a prevalence of 0.5%. If we went all the way down to our screening recommendation of 0.1%, we'd actually, for every positive rapid test result in an ED, we'd have more false positives in there than true positives. So how do we deal with that before these people get out of our hands in the emergency department? That was the goal setting up this project. One of the things that ties the hands of the people in the emergency department a little bit is that CDC currently recommends that preliminary positive results are confirmed with a Western blot, and for those where the Western blot is indeterminate, that you conduct a follow-up with those people 1 month later. So that's at least two additional visits with people who in this setting probably aren't infected. And in order to more quickly distinguish those people from the people who actually are infected, we wanted to look at rapid test algorithms in the context of a larger study where we were looking at how are we going to implement HIV screening in emergency department settings. So that's the goal of this project. We took a demonstration project. We were looking at ways to implement the screening guidelines in emergency departments and overlaid a rapid testing algorithm similar to what Gene and Jackie have already described on top of that protocol. We did this in two large urban emergency departments. One's Denver Health Medical Center in Denver and Alameda County Medical Center at Highland Hospital there in Oakland. You'll see that they're both large urban hospitals. They both see an awful lot of patients. Highland sees more patients and also has almost twice as many HIV infections in their regular patient population. The other thing that's different between the two hospitals, and this gets back to the original study, how best do we implement the screening guidelines, was that the way that they did testing was a little different. So screening location is where do the patients become informed that, you know, we offer HIV testing routinely in this hospital, and we're going to test you as long as that's okay with you. Here's your opportunity to say, no, I don't want an HIV test. And that differs between the two hospitals. It's offered, that is explained at triage at Highland and at the registration in Denver. The eligibility criteria are slightly different ages, neither one down to 13. Thank you, IRB. And they are, in Denver, able to not screen prison populations or victims of sexual assault. The big difference in terms of implementing an algorithm or evaluating the way that they do testing in terms of a process evaluation is how and where the testing is done. In Highland Hospital, they're doing oral fluid testing, and that specimen is collected by someone who's a dedicated tester. That's their only job. They test people all day long in the hospital, and they do that testing within a back corner of the emergency department that's dedicated to running the test. In Denver, the nurses come in after the person has been identified at registration as saying, yes, I am okay with getting tested. They come in and add a tube of blood to whatever else the doctors order for HIV testing. And there, that test, that blood is sent to the hospital lab just like any other lab test for the hospital, and HIV testing is run in the lab. So for Highland, what tests, rapid tests, are they using as part of our additional evaluation? As I said, they're screening everybody with the oral fluid rapid test. Well, we wish they were screening everybody. They're screening the people who don't opt out and who they actually get to before they get discharged from the ED with the oral fluid rapid test. And if the oral fluid test is reactive, they actually decided to run all three waived rapid tests on anticoagulated whole blood that's collected in a tube, and then they run all three tests. They wanted to do that because they wanted to see, in a fairly efficient way, which one of these tests would be best for their setting. It's sort of combining what Gene's doing with what we want to do to see whether or not this actually works. And they are still doing the Western blot as that checked to make sure that the results that they get from their testers in the ED are matching what we would have gotten if we had done this all in a lab. In Denver, when the specimen gets to the lab techs run the Unigold test, and if that's reactive, they run Oraquick. If both of those are reactive, they run the Western blot to make sure they got it right. If they're discordant, they run a multi-spot, and then they also run the Western blot. And the reason they add multi-spot here is because they want to check and see if the two rapid tests do as good or a better job of identifying people who screen false positive here than the Western blot. So this diagram I noticed today was a little bit not quite right, but it gives an overview of the whole flow of how these patients and specimens and testing go through the project. They're offered, again, it varies by hospital, but the fact that HIV testing is offered at this hospital and here's your chance to say, no, I don't want an HIV test, is offered to all the patients. Then they receive, typically it's a pamphlet with pretest information, and if they say they want an HIV test, they get one, and this is where it's wrong. The box should be here, not over one, past the arrow. So if they have a rapid test and it's negative, in both of these settings, they assess whether or not the person is high risk, and they offer post-test counseling to the ones that are. If they're considered low risk, they don't do post-test counseling. If the rapid test is reactive, and this is the single rapid test, so Unigold in Denver or Oraquick on oral fluid in San Francisco or in Oakland, they all get post-test counseling, and they all get referred to the HIV clinic. That's the referral point for the respective hospitals. The difference here is what Gene talked about in terms of if all of the rapid tests that we did after the initial test were positive, then the message as they go out the door is something along the lines of, we're pretty sure you're positive and your follow-up appointment is for your next step in HIV care. If one or more of the second, third, fourth tests that we threw at them with the rapid test is non-reactive, then they're told that your tests are discordant and we need to take it, you need to go to the doctor to figure out what that means. So the change is not in the procedure, it's a change in the message. And so what have they done so far? Denver's tested over 5,500 people. They've had 18 reactive Uni-Gold tests with 0.3% prevalence. All of those went to Oraquick, and 77% of them were reactive on Oraquick, and all of those confirmed by Western blot. And all of these people, as I said, were referred to the HIV clinic for follow-up care. Four of the 18, 22%, so in parallel with the one of the first slides I had in terms of what percentage of these people would be false positive, but small numbers. So whether or not you worry about four people being referred is a different question than we could talk about at the end. But 22% of the people were negative on Oraquick. All of them were negative by multispot. One of them was indeterminate on the Western blot. Eventually, when they came back a month and a half later, was confirmed as negative, suggesting that, you know, in four specimens, the rapid test algorithm might be better at figuring out who's infected and who's not than the Western blot. Likewise, in Oakland, they tested more than three times as many people, 17,000. They had more than five times as many people who were detected as reactive and double the prevalence. They had most of those, remember, they're doing three rapid tests on all 107 of these. Most of those, 82%, were reactive on all three tests, and all of those were Western blot positive as well. The majority of the rest of them were negative on all three tests, and we'll talk about what's underneath that in a minute. And there was one where the rapid tests were discordant. That one was Oraquick matching Oraquick. I don't know if you picked up on Gene's slides before, but when they ran the Oraquick on oral fluid and then repeated the Oraquick on serum, in his case, on anticoagulated whole blood in Oakland, the Oraquick matched the Oraquick. That gets back to the WHO recommendation to use a different test to make sure you're not falsely reactive to the same thing. And then, again, 14 of the 18 people who were falsely reactive and pretty much correctly identified by the rapid tests were indeterminate. All of these were negative on follow-up. One of them required multiple follow-ups because the first follow-up we did was also indeterminate. They did a viral load. It was a very low detectable viral load, which ended up being contamination. And then three times later, by the time they got them 2.5 months later, they were negative on everything we did and determined to be uninfected. So the gold standard tests may not be as good as the simple, easy tests that everybody in the room could run if they wanted to. That's what one of the things we learned here is that the rapid test algorithm in the emergency department, one, it provides more information. Even if you don't say this is an HIV diagnosis, you have a heck of a lot more information in front of you in less than an hour than you would over the course of 2 weeks worth of lab testing. And although we don't have what Jacqueline had, a control phase to compare the 120 so people that we identified as positive here and whether or not they all made it to medical care, because we are referring them all the same day, we don't have a comparison group, but I would think in an ED it's at least as hard to get them to get to care if you don't refer them until you get the Western blot back. We tested over 22,000 people. We only had 125 reactive people, so we need more numbers in that group to make sure that we are making the right types of recommendations. But it's clear from these data that rapid test algorithms are working and providing more information in the same visit, and I think that in the same visit is the part that really matters. In addition to Brian Boyette, who put all these slides together even after he realized that he wasn't going to be able to come, I'd like to acknowledge all of our collaborators at Highland Hospital, at Denver Health Medical Center, and other people who helped out with the project at CZC. And I'm going to cut myself off now. Did I talk fast enough? Moderator, am I back on time schedule?